Welcome to Pickle Me This, the officially unofficial podcast for Rick and Morty on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Today we're talking about Season 1, Episode 3, Anatomy Park. Here's Aaron with the recap.
In this Christmas-themed episode of Rick and Morty, Jerry decides he wants to have a human holiday and bans the family's use of electronic devices while his parents come over for a visit. But he soon regrets this when his parents bring over their new lover, whose wholesome but kinky approach to love and honesty makes them uncomfortable. Meanwhile, Rick pretends to be caring for an elderly homeless man's health care while secretly working with a microscopic scientist to open Anatomy Park, the world's first theme park built entirely inside the innards of a person. Things go wrong, Morty is forced to shrink and enter the theme park to try to save the man's life, and Rick's hopes to be the next Walt Disney. Well, Jim, what'd you think of Anatomy Park?
I like this one. It's clearly a Jurassic Park. It's got Jurassic Park written all over it. I'm a huge fan of Jurassic Park.
Among other things, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I found that they were doing actually the most interesting stuff in this episode with the family.
Okay. Like,
away from sort of the A-plot.
Yeah.
I thought Jerry's struggle to come to terms with his parents' relationship with Jacob was the most interesting part.
I am a big sucker for Christmas themed episodes. I wish all of my favorite shows did like some kind of Christmas episode or version, because it just makes me happy. But I thought John Oliver was a great guest voice as this twerpy kind of microscopic version of John Hammond from Jurassic Park, down to the little bone cane he's got with whatever the hell is in the microscopic amber he had. I loved his delight at the small intestine, small world. With the people like, oh, this goes on for miles. He's like, and then the large intestine.
Right.
I thought there's a lot of like, so you're right. The heavy dramatic lifting's being done by the human holiday part, but the anatomy part is just what this show does so well, which is put a bunch of pop culture references into a blender, hit puree, somehow pay like there are things that pay proper respect to the things that it's trying to lampoon, but also do it in a funny kind of engaging manner that never like really, man, how am I trying to say this? The parody never gets so bold that like it feels like cheap or lazy, and it somehow manages to tell an interesting and kind of exciting story of its own right. But like, and also I think the animation of this episode is particularly brilliant. Like, when the I think it's gonorrhea that's about to get hit by the bone train, like the way the shadows light on its face as it approaches is almost like something out of Batman, the animated series. I like some of the touches, like the lazy river with the red blood cells as inner tubes. And then the sight gag of like the giant Santa Claus floating over America and the shadow of its penis and the destruction it's causing to the Rocky Mountains as it's hinted to be dragging on the ground and menacing this logger. What a fucking demented idea that you've got this massive, like, continent-spanning man that you then explode, and it's dressed as a naked Santa Claus, and it's raining gore down all of North America. Then they do a lot of, like, the, you know, standard, like, setup and subversion of, like, you know, John Oliver does the standard oblivious bad guy thing of wanting to have someone else make the heroic sacrifice and kind of like trails off. He's like, oh, you know what? It was a dick movie for me to pause there. This is all obviously my fault. And then they subvert it again when it turns out he was just too panicky and stupid to realize there was an autopilot the whole time. And
I think after watching many episodes of Rick and Morty that pandering works.
Yeah. And there's
they don't, you're right, they don't totally go in on it, but I imagine when you're sitting in that writer's room and you're thinking, okay, this is so obviously, clearly Jurassic Park, are people going to hate that? Are people going to say, oh, it's too close to Jurassic Park, it's so obvious what you did there, hack.
Right, are hack. We hacks? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like, you could probably get so in your own head about that stuff, and I imagine they do.
I think that's part of it. Like, they start kind of like with that blueprint, and then they just kind of layer on the references and keep blending until like it meets their standard of like, oh yes, we can without shame roll this out, and it's not just a ripoff of Jurassic Park, or it's not just a ripoff of Inner Space or Fantastic Voyage. They, you know, that's where the sweat equity in the writer's room, I guess, pays off, because
yeah, it does work for me.
Yeah,
I don't come away thinking, oh, these hack writers.
I usually
come away thinking,
don't
that was
like
great.
Being pandered to.
Yeah,
and I think that's the fine line. It's like, you know, a way to like hit everyone's kind of Gen X, early millennial nostalgia about all of these, like all of our favorite movies. But, you know, anybody could just, you know, do the Chris Farley, remember when John McClane Clark crawled through the air ducts.
Like, sometimes in episodes like this, it's so hard not to do that on this podcast.
Right.
Because there are so many moments I love, and I just want to say, wasn't it funny when?
Yeah. But Rick and Morty, Stranger Things is another one that does that, like pandering, but elevated, so it doesn't insult your intelligence. Yeah, so it's super effective, but not everyone can do it to a way that like doesn't like, you know, force you to just like, you know, turn off your brain.
And I don't know if you can tell, but I'm itching to talk about it. They always have these B plots, right?
Yeah.
So to kind of accompany the sort of mashup, cultural mashup that they do, they have these B plots, which I think deal with more real issues most of the time.
Yeah.
And this is something that Jerry is having a very hard time dealing with.
Little parents across the globe, you know, dismayed that instead of having family time, we are all glued to our screens. What do you do about it? Can you put your foot down on the day that celebrates humanity? Or as Morty snarkily responds, I thought it was a holiday about a half god man, you know?
But it seems so much more. This episode in the B plot seems like it's about connections with people and how those connections are both expressed and also how they're judged. So like you have Summer on her phone, and that really annoys the shit out of Jerry, because he wants to have this very specific connection with his family. And then when he gets that connection, it's something that doesn't quite fit within his view of how this connection should go.
Right.
And so it turns him off. And then we realize that Summer's connection was actually on her phone to her boyfriend.
Right.
And that's like, then that connection is broken by Jerry's connection. And it's just like, real interesting puzzle of like how people relate to each other and the different forms that takes. And I thought it was fascinating.
Yeah. And the fact that like, you know, if Jerry was as connected with his family as you would expect a guy like him to want to be, that it wouldn't be a surprise that Summer has a boyfriend that might be concerned if she goes no contact on Christmas.
Yeah.
And, also the idea that like connecting to his parents took him to uncomfortable places. And, you know, why was he uncomfortable with that, what his adult parents are doing? And the fact that, like, you know, his father has this medical scare, and, you know, his mom and him are like, you know, have we even really lived their lives? And then this Jacob guy comes in. And I mean, it does, like, that's the funny thing is, like, it pushes, like, nobody. Like, is there a person in the world that has the fantasy of your geriatric wife getting with a younger man while you hide in the closet and wear a Superman costume?
Absolutely, that exists. I don't know any people like that, but it certainly exists.
But it's kind of like, you know, if your parents came and said, hey, we're swingers, that would be one level of uncomfortable to some people. But then, we're swingers and here's our lover. Oh, actually, your mother and him are the swingers. I'm just a weird voyeur guy. And also, I dress up as this wholesome, you know, superhuman Boy Scout.
Like, no, it's a weird mix.
Also, but what is like the fantasy there?
That's a real good question.
Maybe that's the thing that makes it okay for him, that he's Superman. Like, you know, any time he could put a stop to this and he's omnipotent, but he's into it. But that like gives him like the self-confidence to be okay with losing the control of the sexual escapades there, that he's Superman. So, hey, if Jimmy fucks Lois Lane, it's cool. I'm still Superman.
Still Superman, yeah. Yeah, maybe. Maybe. I don't know. That's a twisted complex.
Maybe he needs to find his Lex Luthor. The other thing is that everybody else is like sees this as like, oh, you know, these elders have found love late in life, and it's very sweet, and it's like they're finding it very personally fulfilling, and it's very brave, all the things that they're doing. And Jerry's like, but this isn't my normal. I wanted a Norman Rockwell Christmas. And what I'm getting is a very wholesome, very sex positive, but certainly not, you know, Norman Rockwell type Christmas.
Not conventional, no.
Right. But he's getting the real connection he wanted. And he's like, oh, actually, I wish Maybe everybody had come and just buried her face in Facebook.
Yeah, no, he leaves the room when they get to the real stuff. Yeah, he seems very controlling in this episode. Like, he wants this very specific definition of what he's got. But the thing I found a little strange is that at the end of this episode, when it's raining blood, the family's first instinct is to run to Jerry, who tells them that everything is okay, because the newsman says.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's a strange thing that in a crisis, they turn to Jerry. And I don't know if that's true if Rick's in the room. But they definitely go to him.
Did they run to Jerry, or were they checking on Jerry? Because, like, I wonder, like, I feel like I had the impression that it's like Beth sees this Armageddon happening outside and is like, oh, Jesus, what's going on to Jerry? Because he
can't fend for himself.
Right.
You got to get him.
And the more we get, the more we get exposed to him, the more, like, kind of pathetic he seems and kind of oblivious. Like, last episode where... because Beth comes in and sarcastically looks at what's going on with Snuffles and is like, oh yeah, no way this could go wrong. And he's like, that's what you said on the day of our wedding. Like, right. Without any kind of hint of irony or like, just, he just self-owned himself and scored an own goal. But the other thing is, like, this show does get away with a lot of stuff that I think other shows wouldn't. And I'm constantly amazed that, like, they have this whole thing that comes out of nowhere where, you know, Ethan is angry. Why is he angry? Because his brother molested him. And it's like, that's not particularly something that you can get away with joking. But I realized as I was watching this, is like, it's not really a joke. Like, the way in universe, as this is happening, Jacob is being very caring and he's saying what, like, any, like, qualified therapist would be.
Yeah.
It's like, he didn't, what your brother did to you didn't define you or make you into something.
Yeah.
You're your own guy. And that's, you know, and you've got Summer, and, you know, the answer is more human connection. So it's only funny because we're not used to seeing this kind of honesty and this kind of, like, relational truth in this kind of juxtaposition of a happy holiday. But it's not like, ha ha, Ethan got molested, or ha ha, look at how fucking up his ass Jacob is with his advice. It's just a weird scenario that some actual wisdom and love is being dispensed through.
Yeah. I think there is honestly a little bit of comedy in being uncomfortable. And that's sort of what that plays on at the beginning when they start to reveal it, right? It's like the talk about the bush, and then you're like, oh, that was, I guess that's funny because I don't know what to do but laugh.
Right.
But yeah, then it turns into something else.
Yeah. So Anatomy Park, you know, that's like you said, this is the Chris Farley, like, imagine how funny this all is. But there's a couple of things I thought was really interesting, like how protective that Rick was of Pirates of the Pancreas. And, you know, how hypervigilant he is about people attacking that idea, even when they're not. Like, Morty just literally is rattling, like, things that he's seeing off. But he does have, like, a Pirates of the Pancreas. And then they brilliantly pay that off with the stinger at the end where Rick is with Annie, you know, getting a progress call in the new Anatomy Park. And, you know, the investors have some notes for, like, you know, does a pancreas make pirates? No, it makes insulin. And Rick is angry that they're turning his idea into a monument of mediocrity.
It's a great line. Monument to compromise is what they're building. It's real good.
And that's certainly, I feel like that's, like, some shared frustration from all the creative types on the show that's dealt with, like, you know, network notes. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, they're, like, doing a very specific, you know, nuanced skewering of pop culture. And, like, you just have some idiot executive that doesn't get it.
Sure. I think my favorite moment of that whole plot line is when Ruben's about to die. And he's taking, like, his last breath, and Morty's holding on to this guy's hand, said, I'm not going to let you go. And then he does, and he coughs he sneezes this dead body right into Rick's face.
So have you seen the Inner Space movie? It was like this late 80s.
The Martin Short one?
With Dennis
Quaid. Yeah, yeah.
Is it Quaid?
Yeah.
Yeah, Dennis Quaid, where there's a scene where the bad guy gets knocked into the stomach acid, and then, like, you see his, like, skeleton bob up, and then on the outside, is it Martin Short that's got, is injected? He, like, belches.
I think so. It's been a long time.
Which, like, he digested the bad guy, and you see his skeleton, yeah. And then he... I thought that was a nice homage to that, because you've got this over-the-top death scene, and mm-hmm. then it ends up with just, like, you know, just getting, you know, it sneezes on Rick, and he wipes it off. He wipes the remains of this person off. But also right. The way they animated that, where it's like he just got peeled off in layers from this coughing, I thought was super funny. And then... Yeah. You know, you had the Pancho character, which is kind of like, you know, your stereotypical henchman. Mm-hmm. But there's also a little bit of Dennis Nedry, where it's like he causes all this death and destruction because he didn't get paid what he thought he should get paid to program this, you know? So this guy's like turning on, and like he's got, it's like, I'll sell these diseases to the highest bidder, Al-Qaeda, North Korea, Republicans, people on the internet who can only be sexually aroused by Japanese cartoon teenagers. But his litany of complaints against this John Hammond type is like, you pompous, arrogant, iTunes gift card giving right. as a holiday bonus fool. Like, it's very much like Dennis Nedry. It's like your grievance with this person and your action against is out of the proportion to the grievance.
I mean, he's got a valid complaint. iTunes gift cards, come on.
Yeah.
Cash. If you're just going to give monetary value, give it in cash.
Yeah, especially if a security personnel who's like tasked to die in your defense, like, yeah, you definitely want to make sure their bread is buttered.
Also, is a guy with earbuds in listening to fucking podcasts or Miley Cyrus' latest album really the person you want guarding your theme park?
That's true.
You don't want him listening to music on the job.
You want both ears free and listening for hepatitis C.
Right.
Which I also, that's the other thing, is like there's a little bit of, you know, when the T-Rex comes in at the end of Jurassic Park and chomps the Velociraptors.
That's a great out-rap name.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't wait for it. That'll probably be in the season 4 soundtrack. But, you know, he comes in and they play this heroic music as if the T-Rex is the savior of the humans. Mm-hmm. And I love how they just embrace that. It's like, wait, did we have some kind of like emotional bond with this? Like, nah, I just think they're like that. They're just good guys. Like the T-Rexes throughout Jurassic Park end up being kind of the heroic figures.
Yeah, when you get to the later movies, especially.
Yeah.
Like Jurassic World stuff.
It's... Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, like when the Spinosaurus in Jurassic 3 kills one of the T-Rexes, but then the T-Rex at the end is able to, like, they gang up on it or something.
I think so.
There's a theme of the T-Rexes being the unsung hero, kind of almost a Godzilla figure, where Godzilla doesn't maybe care either way. Sometimes he destroys Tokyo, but also when a bigger threat from outer space, he's an asshole monster, but he's Earth's asshole monster.
Yeah.
And then there's a couple other things, like Rick opens his car when he lands in the homeless guy's nipple, and his car once again just spills out alcohol bottles.
Right.
There's the whole like, hey, I saved you, Morty. You know, and he says puffy vagina, and Morty's like, what? Yeah. Which I thought that's another one of those things where it's funny, but it's also real because, like, you know, people. Online, like, they're so massively insecure. If you like go to reddit.com/sex, it's like half the threads are guys worrying about how big or small their dick is or whether it's cut or uncut, and women that have like external visible genitalia, and it's like, Jesus. And well, like, and okay, I love okay, Morty's,
well,
like,
get off Reddit and go to like DeviantArt or Tumblr, or
yeah.
you'll fit right in.
Yeah.
Like, there's someone for everyone.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I love Morty's like, Puffy, why is that a bad thing? Is that a bad thing? Like, that's shit everybody's reaction.
It doesn't
seem
like a bad thing to me either, Morty.
Yeah, like if people start like having like real strong opinions about that shit, I just assume that they don't have sex, you know, because what the fuck?
No interdimensional travel this episode. As far as I remember,
you're right.
None whatsoever.
They bridge gulfs of scale,
mm-hmm.
but not distance or time.
And it does feel like the last three episodes they've been playing with all of that stuff, mm-hmm. right? Time, dimensions, scale. Like you said, they're kind of going through all of the sci-fi staples.
Sure.
Which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, and that's when why I like Rick and Morty feels like it has a lot of legs is because it's such a brilliant concept because it's a framework in which you can literally do anything that you want to do. Like, there's nothing, like, you want to do a straight up spoof of some 80s action movie, you can find a way to fit that in. If you want to go super high concept science fiction, you can do that. You can tell serious stories of love and loss, and you can then make it a joke and then make it serious at the end again. It's great.
It's a road of wonder, a trail of food. It's a pathway to break up the bad and good. It's a tube that digests and then sings out the rest. It's a small, small intestine. It's a small intestine.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering The Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwe is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of King's Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
All right, Jim, are you ready to do a little segment we like to call Plot to the Future?
I am.
Where we set our portal guns to open Dimension BM-77 and to take a look at behind-the-scenes details, references and Easter eggs, and future plot spoilers as they may be. So I listened to this commentary, and it seems like that the one thing that they knew they wanted to get to was this giant Santa Claus exploding in the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And they, like, you know, really struggled. Like, what we were talking about like, how do you pander without pandering? And they, like, you know, first had, like, this was going to be a fantastic voyage and inner space mashup. And then they're like, you know what? You know, maybe we should go, like, Willy Wonka. Because I think what they're trying to do is find the right, like, what is the relationship of this doctor? Was it Dr. Bloom?
Yeah.
Or Zeon? Yeah. And like they also mentioned Apocalypse Now. I could see that where like Morty's sent mm-hmm. in to find the Colonel Zeon Bloom, and he's gone slightly mad. But the framing of Jurassic Park kind of allows you to do all of that stuff, because Jurassic Park is very high concept fantasy. It's also like also an amusement park with rides and shit. So they were able
to. It's also a horror film.
It's also a horror film, and it's also an action film. Mm-hmm. So I thought that's a kind of where it's like maybe they just had to go through all those things to get all those different elements, so they can more effectively pander at that. Also, the idea that like the core of the story started as like a zombie battle, like a zombie horror.
Thanksgiving themed zombie battle. Yeah.
Yeah. Like the human body is like one giant shopping mall, and you've got like this particular.
It seems like there was a race war involved at some point.
Yeah. Between... Like the John Oliver character was like maybe a race of dudes, and there was one blue and one green. And, we're in BM77, so it won't be a spoiler to say that they fully explore that idea in the Unity episode.
Yeah.
That seems like that's the other thing is like if you have a discarded idea that just doesn't fit, just put it in your idea box, because you never know when it'll be perfect to deploy it in a later episode.
Will we get that Thanksgiving themed episode?
I hope so, because again, I love fucking holiday themed episodes. One of the things that they pointed out, and now ever since I've seen this commentary I can't unsee it, is Jerry's Christmas trees upside down.
No, I'm with him. That annoys me.
I think that they just it's not a art mistake, it's a color mistake. It's like if they went red green instead of green red.
So you're saying the trees are red, but the space between them is green, and it looks like the trees are upside down?
Exactly. And if they had just colored it,
shit, I think you're right.
If they had just gone and like it's just like a color mix up, someone zigged instead of zagged, and no one caught it until. Plus, I also think that the first time that Jerry's introduced, he's wearing that apron, which largely kind of hides the mistake. But then when you take it, so it's like, everybody's like, oh, okay. And then once you're like once he takes it off, it's still not a big jarring thing. But yeah, the second someone pointed it out, I'm like, holy shit, this is, yeah.
That makes a ton of sense. Yeah. That it would just be a color mix up. Red trees. Come on.
Yeah. The other way you could, if I want to do a, well, actually the portal was blue and it turned green. Maybe this is a foreshadowing to what happens at the end when the world gets covered in blood.
Okay.
So red like trees you had everywhere. A forest of green trees, but they got it covered by the guy's blood. So
yeah.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah.
It's actually smarter than you thought.
I'm too dumb to get it, I guess.
They were also pointing out in the commentary, like, there had a lot of crude sex jokes, especially between ostensibly underage people.
Yeah.
And Dan mentioned that he had a habit of, and, whether how much of this is true and how much of this is a joke and how much of this is a joking exaggeration, but, like, he would a lot of times, like, really do, like, try to push the boundaries of what he could get away with in community in NBC and just rely on standards and practices to come back and be like, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. You can't have a giant penis dragging across North America, or you can't have this 14-year-old, finger banging like a college co-ed or whatever. And with Adult Swim, I guess their standards and practices are looser, perhaps non-existent. And when they were watching the finished stuff, they're like, oh shit, this joke made it through. We thought that somebody would come back and have us tone it down, and we never got around to it. But on the other hand, like, I feel like that's a kind of two sides of the same coin. Like, people are uncomfortable with elder sex, and they're uncomfortable about young people's sexuality. But like,
sure,
Morty and Summer being sexual beings is like, maybe Morty is a little too young, but like,
that's something. 14?
I think he's supposed to be 14.
Then yeah, he's probably right at that age.
But I wasn't sure like how old Annie was supposed to be. I assumed that she was like a teenage intern until at the end when it turns out that she's also a brilliant genetic scientist who could fully develop a. So like maybe she is in her mid-20s, and so like you've got some definite pedophilia going on there, but. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just feel like that it's more of like us being uncomfortable with the idea of young people being sexual as uncomfortable as we are with old people being sexual. And final reference, apparently the tattoo on Pancho's shoulder of the fist holding the dagger is a reference to Die Antwoord.
Yeah.
The South African, what would you call them? Rap?
Metal?
Subversive? Trash?
Industrial? It's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good, but it's wild.
Yeah. But it's, I guess that's the tattoo that the lead, the front man of that group has on his shoulder.
They call them Ninja.
Ninja.
I can't not think of Fortnite when I hear the name Ninja now. So that kind of ruined it for me. But
what's funny is, like, if you took the Fortnite Ninja and you put him on a decade binge of like meth and zero carb intake, I think he would kind of look like Ninja.
Okay.
And you know what? I don't think Ninja, the Iantor Ninja, cares because he's got a song called Ugly Boy that's about the virtues of loving ugly boys who don't give a fuck. So if you give a fuck about me saying that about you, Ninja, then I think you just disappear in a poof of your own logic.
Pickle Me This is distributed by Bald Move in association with Starburns Audio. It's produced by Jason Smith and Scott Porch from Starburns, and myself, Ben Aaron, from Bald Move. All music featured on this podcast is from the Rick and Morty soundtrack, available from Sub Pop Records. Please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. To discover the many other great shows we do, please check out baldmove.com and starburns.audio. If you appreciate what we do and want to directly support us, consider joining our club at club.baldmove.com. to get access to exclusive bonus audio and video features. Finally, you can follow us on your favorite social media at Bald Move. See you next time.